Thanks for listening to the History Buff podcast with your resident history buff and Berlin tour guide, Arty. If you're enjoying the podcast, then you can really, really help us by liking and sharing the episodes on social media and rating the podcast on your streaming platform. If you'd like to see more History Buff content, then please give us a follow on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for your support. And today, we're going to be talking about drug usage during the Second World War. For this, I'm joined by a colleague of mine, a fellow tour guide, Jonathan, who joins me now. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello.
Hi. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Jonathan Naumann. I come originally from Israel. Been here for the last 16 years, here meaning Berlin. So I've been doing tours for around 14 years or so in Berlin. Wow. For a while, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, but all the classics, Second World War, Third Reich, Cold War, Jewish life, a little bit of Prussian history.
And what's your favorite era?
Well, I don't know if favorite is the right word to describe it, but I guess Third Reich and Second World War, it just
were more
extreme.
Yeah.
And those extremities of humanity, good and bad.
Yes.
It's just fascinating. It's like they say, a car crash and you can't take your eyes off of it. And you want to know all the gory details.
Of course. Some of those interesting details we'll be delving into today, because today's topic is, as I said, about drug usage during the Second World War. We will chiefly be talking about the use of amphetamines by the Nazis, also by the Allied powers. What else will we be discussing?
Well, we go dive a bit deeper to the man himself, Adolf Hitler, and his personal physician from most of the Third Reich years, a guy called Dr. Theodor Morell. Personally, I'll be drawing a lot of my information from several books, mainly the book Blitz, written by Norman Ohler. He had amazing access to some of those medical files of Dr. Morell and some others.
Well, Dr. Morell was his
personal physician.
Personal physician. So, and because, I mean, obviously most people know from very early on in his rule, Hitler was on a cocktail of drugs.
Yes.
So yes, it was the people at the very top, not just people out on the battlefield. Cool.
So in the early 19th century, right, this is where all kicks off. Morphine, an alkaloid in opium poppies, has been isolated. When they use incorrect dosage, it will take the pain away almost instantly. After the invention of syringes in 1850, morphine will be used to treat wounded soldiers in the American Civil War and the Franco-Prussian Wars as well in Europe. In the summer of 1897, a chemist with Bayer Company synthesized acid from willow bark, and as a result, we now have aspirin. Within a fortnight, the same chemist, Felix Hoffmann, invented a substance called dextylmorphine, aka heroin. So, jumping now to the 20th century. Well, after the First World War, we go a bit globally. Britain and France, via the colonies, were able to supply the subject's desire for stimulants, such as coffee, tea, and vanilla, for example, pepper, and other natural medicines. Germany, having lost all of its colonies as a result of the Versailles Treaty, had to produce and synthesize their own. So in 1925, some of the bigger chemical factories in Germany came together to create IG Farben, one of the biggest chemical companies of the world. So now we're coming to the main player when it comes to the drug production in Germany. In the Tembler factory in southeast Berlin, research has begun. Dr. Fritz Hauschild, inspired by the use of benzedrine within the US athletes, legal drug at the time, managed to synthesize methamphetamine. And in October of 1937, Tembler company patented pervitin.
Mm-hmm.
Pervitin is going to play a big role, in at least in the first decade or so of the Third Reich, if not two. Consuming pervitin made one feel invigorated, focused, and lively. The senses are sharpened and one's thought process is accelerated. The effects can last up to 12 hours, but after a prolonged period of usage, the effects are less potent and there are noticeable negative effects on the body and mind. Lack of drive, depression, reduced cognition, and trouble finding words.
Yeah, so but it was used in Germany before the war as well.
Yeah, it was, so to speak, over-the-counter, no prescription.
So, for just making clear to everyone, this is over-the-counter methamphetamine, okay, that was sold in pill form, oral, wasn't it?
And not only that, yeah, you're right, also chocolate laced with methamphetamine was sold on the open market. Brand name was called Hildebrand,
okay.
Targeting housewives.
Wow.
Complete the house chores quicker and with a smile.
Oh my God.
And just also in general, methamphetamine in its pure form is less harmful than people think of crystal meth.
That's right. Because it was manufactured legally, obviously it was a lot purer.
Yeah.
Well, it was purer.
Yeah, think about Breaking Bad, but on a massive nationwide scale.
Yeah, exactly.
And regulators and scientists and people and teams and hundreds of people, right?
Yeah.
Well, unlike what you have today, crystal meth, that's often produced in amateurish illegal labs. It's usually mixed with poisons such as petrol, battery acid, or antifreeze.
Yes.
Doesn't sound that nice for a Monday morning. So where it became kind of big for Temler, they hired a Berlin PR firm, which was inspired by the Coca-Cola PR methods, by the way, and started to tease the public about new wonder drug that's soon arriving to the market. They sent free samples to doctors so they can test the drug themselves and in clear conscience recommend those to patients. Classic drug dealer MO. First test is free. Get a bit of a taste, tell the others, others get a bit of a taste, and then you have your own multi-level marketing Ponzi scheme where everybody's hooked on your drugs.
Okay, right. So that was the first, that was Perkins, I guess you could say, foray into the German market. But I guess what we're really, I guess, focusing on today is how it then affected the war effort.
But before the war, it was mostly for workers, production lines, especially once in 1933, once the Nazis come to power, starting to work secretly and then a bit more openly about the war production. You need to do double work. You need to work a lot more than usual because you're starting for way behind everybody else in Europe, in the world. So they're going to encourage workers, production line workers, assembly line workers, people do double, triple shifts to work more and more, produce more and more. Obviously, the more you work, also, the more money you earn. So you think, fair enough, it takes its drug.
So to increase productivity, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
I mean, you also have students and academics use it, but that's been forever, right? Even till this day, students take some kind of, well, I guess some sort of speedy substance, Ritalin or whatever now is on the market. Yeah. To go through the night and cram for a test.
Yes, exactly.
It's always been like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the first instance where pervitin was used in a military setting was with the invasion of Poland. So the first days, it was obvious the Polish troops were no match for the German troops because the panzer troops and reconnaissance divisions that crossed vast distances in a very short amount of time, they had a very high state of combat readiness and kept moving day and night. And I know it's not the whole reason, but it would have definitely been a part of the reason that Germany overran Poland within 2 weeks. So that had to have helped, the fact that they were powered by this stuff.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Surely also eventually, when they were using it, eventually it doesn't have an effect. Or they have to keep taking more and more to get the same effect.
Yes. And they realized that usually a detox period for a soldier will be around 3 months, 2 to 3 months to completely clean the system out. But then they thought, well, we can't just have entire platoons, brigades or armies just resting up for 2 or 3 months. We need them. Right. Especially we're going to have a Western front now.
Right.
Soon. We can't just let entire armies sleep. So we're just going to keep pumping them until it doesn't work and then just stop. Maybe later also providing other substances, right? But basically stop. Also, the more the usage went on, the months went on, you have regiment doctors or medics recording very negative effects, right? That hallucinations and complete loss of energy.
Because they weren't sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That as well, right? Plays with your mind. With your mind. And, well, you want to harness that kind of raw energy before with whatever, the adrenaline, the kind of all for the Führer, and I'm high on meth, I'm on a cloud, I'm just going to... Doesn't matter how strong, and something also will make sense later when we talk about the Blitzkrieg in France. It doesn't matter how strong your defensive army is. Usually their kind of truth, rule of thumb in warfare is defensive army is usually stronger than the conquering.
Or the well, because also army. They know the land as well.
Exactly. But when you encounter not waves of Germans coming at you, you encounter one single continuous wave for weeks on end. It just doesn't stop. And when you have an enemy that doesn't know when to stop, you cannot stop him.
No, but I mean, the thing is, like with pervitin is, so it was methamphetamine was classed as a drug then, but it was obviously, you know, legal, you could get over the counter. But What's funny and quite ironic is that the Nazis viewed drug use as very antisocial.
Yes.
You know, and they viewed drug takers as a menace to society and generally looked down upon them. So I just think it's quite ironic that actually then it was very widespread in the military and that was all fine. But anyway, by December 1941, the Germans had conquered most of mainland Europe. The occupied land stretched all the way from France in the west to the outskirts of Moscow in the east. The speed of this advance stunned Adolf Hitler's supporters as much as his fiercest critics and enemies. When you had the invasion of France, British Prime Minister Churchill told French Prime Minister Daladier not to worry because the soldiers would only be able to fight for up to 12 hours. And what they did is they bypassed the Maginot Line by just invading through the Ardennes. But they went for the first 3 days whilst high on methamphetamine and they conquered loads of territory. And 35 million Pervitin tablets were used in that campaign. So it was, I think, obviously, in the invasion of France, it was also a very good example of drug use. Not having won that battle, but definitely, I think, maybe making it speedier.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Yeah.
It was all, I mean, but the finish in Blitzkrieg, lightning war, it's all for at least 3-4 days, no stopping. Willpower is one thing. 12 days a night. Gotta have to use some drugs. You're gonna have to use some chemicals. As much as willpower was all about what Hitler was always promulgating, right? The triumph of the will, for example.
Exactly.
And at the end, when things were going bad and people losing battles and armies losing battles, he would say, well, apparently my generals and soldiers forgot the will to win. They don't remember what it's like to have a will.
Yeah.
Will, drugs can kind of interchange them for some.
Yes, sometimes. Exactly. And as the chief enemy of soldiers was tiredness, okay, because they needed to figure out a way to get soldiers to fight for without end. However, the founder, I believe his name is Otto Ranke, he warned that it was very addictive. He knew that it was already that it was very addictive and that it should be considered with the greatest caution. And it also had side effects such as heart failure, mental health problems, including addiction. And this is actually then what led to, I think, its eventual decline in usage in, I think, after the conquering of Western Europe, I think, by 1941. Although I did actually read that Pervitin was actually used well into the Cold War by both East and West German soldiers. So the Bundeswehr, so the West German army, discarded them in the 1970s. And then the GDR, East German National People's Army, discarded them in the 1980s. So apparently there was still usage. It wasn't, so drug usage in the Second World War was not actually just restricted to the Nazis. There was instance of usage in America and Britain, actually. But instead of Pervitin methamphetamine, it was actually the amphetamine Benzedrine, which was the drug of choice of the Allies. So Benzedrine, which I think you mentioned earlier, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, it was originally introduced as a nasal decongestant in 1933. And then it was used, I think, in pill form to treat narcolepsy and epilepsy and alcoholism, and actually used as a study drug. But then it was restricted in Britain in 1937. But then it was actually then given to RAF pilots to help them deal with exhaustion and anxiety. And also it made, well, obviously like Pervitin with German soldiers, it made them feel invincible. And made them take more risks. And in 1942, the Bomber Command approved the usage of 2 5-milligram tablets per man per mission. So it is actually fairly restricted usage. And then the United States followed suit and issued Benzedrine to pilots. So then Bernard Montgomery, or Monty as he was known, who is the head of the British Army, he tested it on his men in North Africa, and he gives up to 20 milligrams per soldier per day for up to 5 days. It's quite a lot. And it was found to increase confidence and raise performance. But yeah, in the testing in the US and the UK, they actually saw the first signs of amphetamine-induced psychosis, so hallucinations, as you said earlier, where the men see things that weren't actually there. There was an instance where they actually, I think it was an American army camp when they were testing the usage of Benzedrine. And after being awake for days, some American soldiers were next to a campfire and they started hallucinating and saw women emerging from the campfires. So, yeah, but under the pressures of war, drugs were allowed in the military as it helped the army to deal, obviously, with fear and exhaustion. But actually, some RAF pilots did actually shun them. because they thought it was a sign of weakness. But it was normalized, and around 72 million pills were ordered for British troops, and then between 250 and 500 million ordered for American usage.
Well, everything's bigger in America.
Yes, exactly. So now we'll talk about the usage of drugs by Adolf Hitler himself. So if I'm right in thinking, I think he did actually use drugs since, I think, actually quite a young age.
Well, from what I read, at least the First World War, during and after for sure, before, I mean, he was a very sickly, well, I don't know if sickly is the right word. He was suffering from different conditions, mainly gastrointestinal problems, spasms of pain, bouts of flatulence.
Yes.
Or quite literally, no shit.
Yes.
And it would bug him all the time. He would always, and I'm not even trying to make a joke, just fart all the time. It was very uncomfortable to be next to him.
Really?
He was aware of it as well. So when trying to hold it in, it would create even more, you know.
Wow. Okay.
Problems.
Okay. So he had to take drugs to relieve that, which yes. probably didn't do anything, to be honest. But he used Pervitin with injections of vitamins and other drugs.
Yes. Right.
And he then started using methadone and oxycodone to deal with the pressures of political life with his chronic pain. So then he started taking amphetamines, especially methamphetamines, during the Second World War. Now, what's slightly ironic about that is that he was known for his clean living, okay, which was essential for his image as Führer of Germany. So that included, you know, obviously not drinking alcohol, he didn't smoke.
He was a vegetarian.
He was a vegetarian. He literally only ate vegetables, I think.
And sugar. He loved sugar. I always say to my tour is there's two things Hitler was addicted to. Chocolate, up to 2 pounds a day sometimes.
Really?
Towards the end.
Oh, okay.
Well, sugar in general, up to 2 pounds. So it was mostly chocolate in different forms. He once even quoted saying is, pralines are the cure for the nerves. What would I do without them? And he would spend, you know, he would go to sleep at 5, 6, 7 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, he was a night owl, wasn't he?
After spending, you know, talking with his secretaries or the friends and their boyfriends and about anything except the war. This was the time when they talk about famous actors and all the gossip amongst it, or talk about new films, or talk about new songs. It was very lighthearted, very chit chat, but he would always have something sweet in his hand or his mouth.
Okay, so he wasn't really that clean after all.
No, I mean, you have to remember that in general.
He had famously bad teeth as well, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes, he did. I actually show a copy of that teeth in my folder of pictures to my tourists.
Oh, lovely. Nice save on the nightstand when you wake up in the morning, reminding you to brush your teeth.
But that's probably why, though, he had such bad teeth, because he ate so
That's
much.
One of the reasons. He just had bad health. Just to finish, the second thing he was addicted to, of course, was methamphetamine. Now, he got his first taste, at least for what I've been reading, from like proper hard drugs, let's call them, after being injured in the First World War from a gas attack. He fought for Germany,
which he went blind from.
Yeah, for a short period, he got treated with eye drops that methamphetamine was one of the main ingredients, or a precursor to methamphetamine. Methamphetamine, as later was to be used, especially in Pervitin, was towards the end 20s and 30s, right? But something similar.
Right.
And so he got a nice, sweet feeling of euphoria, sation, or even getting some energy where you think you shouldn't because you lie convulsing in a bed.
So that was his first, I guess you could say, taste of drugs.
Yes. And, administered to him by doctors, army doctors. So it was like proper medicinal, you know, authorized drug usage.
Right.
Okay. Right. And of course, not to forget at the time what when I saw drugs and kind of looked down upon, oh, they use heroin, they use Pervitin, all this. This was all new. This is all synthesized new drugs, cure-alls. Oh my God, they're amazing. Think about now, new things come out. And you think, oh, this is great. It cures this. It cures that. I feel amazing. Wait 6 months, wait a year or two, and then you can see the side effects, right?
Yes, exactly.
So to understand a little bit about Hitler's drug use, you need to understand who was providing and giving the drugs. We're talking about a guy called Dr. Theodor Morell from Hessen. He was a dermatologist, so skin doctor, and a specialist in sexually transmitted diseases. He joined the Nazi Party in 1933, used his new connection to open up and expand a successful clinic in the upscale and trendy Kudamm Boulevard, the Kurfürstendamm, shortest Kudamm in West Berlin. He became basically a Dr. Feelgood for the rich and famous. You have actors before, opening nights on stage to calm the nerves, we'll get a shot. You got famous athletes. Max Schmeling, the famous boxer, was getting treated by him, right? And it wasn't just the drugging up everybody, talking about vitamins, which are relatively new. Most people who've heard about vitamins, a normal Joe on the street, will assume the kind of invisible forces of good that your body cannot produce. So you're being helped by with this injection, make you feel much better. So vitamins are good. Now, everything else being added to it, you're not being told, but you still think you're getting healthier, right? Mm. We talk about caffeine and glucose, for example. You have lots of animal tissue used, which I find one of the most ironic things. Hitler being, of course, a famous vegetarian, but he was full of animal tissue. Mostly, I think it was pig bellies. So Dr. Morel met Hitler through his Hitler's photographer, Heinrich Hoffmann, who he treated for gonorrhea. Right. In Christmas of 1936. So happy Christmas, a junkie and his dealer. So what Hitler really loved about Dr. Morel, so let's say the first crush, the love at first sight moment was when Hitler told Dr. Morel about his, all of his stomach pains, he had eczema on his legs all the time, right?
It was quite sickly, wasn't it?
Very sickly.
Hypochondriac.
He was a hypochondriac.
Okay, right.
Right? And he always thought, something is around the corner. Once he had to take his polyps out of his throat, he was sure he's dying from cancer. Right? He was always a drama queen.
Okay, right.
He would always go, well, if not, then I guess I'm going to shoot myself in the head. Thank you very much. Like, okay, here goes Hitler again with his shooting himself in the head. And so anyway, Dr. Theo Morel heard about the symptoms and said, hey, I think I can actually help you with that. Let me meet you again tomorrow. I'll bring my kit. We'll cocktail up some cocktail, which eased the pains immediately. And that is the biggest trademark of Morel that Hitler kind of got addicted to, the immediacy, the immediate relief of pains, right, or any other discomfort, right? You do it quick, you do it now. You don't want to get shot and then wait 6 to 8 hours, effects. No, you need to have it now. And that was what Morel was providing for Hitler,
okay. The
now.
He obviously probably took a lot of these drugs to help him concentrate under the immense pressure.
And perform.
And perform.
His speeches famously.
To be fair, yeah, now I think about it, when you see him on a stage, he does look pretty in the clouds, one could say.
Yeah, there's
no one's bringing him down anytime soon.
There's a famous clip, made famous mostly by another famous podcast, where you can see in the 1936 Olympic Games held in Berlin, after Hitler gives an opening ceremony, speeches and whatnot, you have the dancing, all the Hitler youths doing swastikas, and he sits there in the crowd and let the games begin. He sits there, and I urge everybody listening, go on YouTube. It's very easy to find. Use keywords like Adolf Hitler, 1936, Olympic Games, drugs. One of those combinations. Uh-huh. You have 3 or 4 minutes uninterrupted, not edited, not Photoshop of Hitler, tweaking out of his mind for meth. You can see him. Obviously, it's not an audio feature, but rocking back and forth.
I think I've seen this, actually.
Clenched,
yes.
Fist, his mouth as well. It's one of those images that if you see now, it's usually going to be someone wearing barely anything under a bridge, shouting at the moon and drinking battery acid.
Wow.
And you go, oh, no, one of those. Then people saw it and thought, oh, my, look at him. He's so into it. He's willing the athletes with his mind. He's so for the journey.
Well, also, because, of course, back then, they probably didn't really know.
Yeah, of course. They didn't know what tweaking high on meth is, right?
Yes, exactly.
This is something modern life can give you.
Yes, exactly. But, however, the use of all these drugs obviously helped deteriorate his mental as well as his physical state. And towards the end of the war, I believe he was also being given cocaine as well as amphetamines, sedatives, and hormones as well,
yes.
I think. So a cocktail of different drugs.
Also known in Berlin as a Wednesday night.
Yes, exactly. And his natural charisma and energy had obviously begun to decline, and he needed something to keep him being that kind of force of nature that the Führer was known to be. Now, one of the last films taken of him is on his birthday when he came up from the bunker and gave the awards on the Hitler Youth who had been defending Berlin. And he, very famously, he keeps his left hand behind his back, or is it his right hand? I can't remember.
No, it must have been the left. Although the right hand was also, I think, started to...
Yes, but everyone thinks it was Parkinson's, but I read something that apparently it was opioid withdrawal.
Oh, there's not a good chance. I mean, think about it, that Berlin is besieged and drugs are running dry. There's no way to get new drugs or new chemicals or whatever they use to make the drugs. There's no way to get them in Berlin from the factories because either they've been taken over or destroyed. So coming down hard, cold turkey, basically.
So he was basically coming down hard.
So usually I tell people, look, it's 95% certainty that he had Parkinson's. The kind of medical historians gone are very similar to symptoms of coming down hard, very hard from drugs, and your body's just reacting
to going cold turkey.
Or basically shutting down slowly.
Yes. Well, on that note, I think we will end it there. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Arthur.
So thank you very much for that interesting discussion. And I hope you guys found it very interesting. And I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.